Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of the Rogcast. This is the 100th episode, so it's actually been going for 5 years, and I'm very excited because we have an extra special guest who was last on it in the first ever episode. I went to his office and we recorded it in his boardroom. Which, unbeknownst to me, was on a glass table. So the sound quality does sound a little bit like we're in the bath together. I can assure you we weren't. But it gives me great pleasure to welcome back Jason Tracy from BeMore. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks, Rod. Congratulations. 100. Wow. I didn't think we'd get this far when we started in the bathtub.
Exactly.
Welcome to the Rogcast with Rod Turner, the show all about real estate. We discuss everything that affects asset-backed businesses, investments, and go deep into the details with some of the best in the business.
So for anyone kind of listening, please go back and listen to that episode one. Push yourself through the bad sound quality because the content is absolutely fantastic. It talks about Jason's career, going from trading in bulk properties from 2,000 units at a time to developing out to securitizing income. It's got a little bit of everything for everyone. If you are running your own property investment or development business, honestly, it's just fantastic. So please go and listen to that. But Jason, what have you been up to for the last 5 years? I still can't believe it's 5 years since we had you on.
Before I start, I just want to get this out of the way. So Stephanie, I have a new head of marketing now. You know Steph?
I do know Steph.
So Steph has given me warnings. She has told me to be nice to people. She said, mention her. She said, Moana, butter your bread and Mickey Mouse. They wanted to try and get me to get these into the class. I'm going to get it out the way. You've known me, Rod, for a long time. I'm very forthright with everything. I won't be nasty to anyone. And there you go, Steph. You're lovely and I love you. Done.
Well done.
Right, that was it. Out of the way. So, yeah, it's been, 5 years. Where do we start? We've had COVID in the middle of this. We've had a mess of an economy. We've had interest rate rises that no one recognized or expected. Where do we start? I mean,
so 2018, 2019 is probably when it was certainly before COVID happened. I mean, what happened to your business over COVID? How did you deal with that?
So it was very interesting. So BeMore at the time, we started getting a little bit bigger. And as you said, you know, we started to stray away from traditional development into a lot of asset-backed investments. Platform building, and we ended up with moving into a lot of different sectors. In a way, it's probably what's helped us and has helped us strive now. And, you know, we've come out of COVID and we've come out the other side, you know, much stronger company, much better relationships with investors, much stronger team. And I've been very, very lucky that, you know, I don't run BeMore myself. I set it up with Dan Stalder 20 years ago, and my brother Adrian and Paul Irwin, my partners, are exceptional. So I think the good thing about BeMore is we've got four partners who can specialize and move in different directions. And, you know, I guess we're like a shark. If we stop swimming, you know, we die. And over the period of time, there's been lots of sectors that have come to the fore, that have fallen away. You know, BTR back in 2020, 21 was the buzzword. Now it's, where is it? It's gone, you know, for the time being. Just unfundable at the moment. Student is now the main thing in co-living. But if I go back to the last time, so we at the time, we were getting into holiday parks. Mm-hmm. We created Aria Resorts with the help of Angela Gordon's backing and a partner at the time, TMB Capital. We exited that platform, sold it for a big number, right in the middle of COVID. And I think it was, some of it was luck, some of it was perfect timing. I think that all of the main characteristics that we invested in the business and the platform for came through, you know, a downturn, which is a recession. Then all of a sudden, you know, people started renting because they wanted to go on holidays, you know, recession, they didn't travel overseas. Okay, admittedly, it was once in a lifetime that they were actually stopped from traveling overseas. Sure. But it really helped us because holidaying in Britain, you know, the fear of COVID, the fear of traveling, you know, UK holiday parks and holidays in the UK was an exceptional time.
But you went into that before COVID had come about. So what was it that allured you into that kind of sector?
So myself and TMB Capital at the time, we were looking at the problems that we're starting to face and that are now becoming so prevalent in the freehold long income investment arena. So with all of these changes to freeholds and what you can and can't do to freeholds, as you've had in your podcast numerous times, we were thinking, well, there must be a gap in the market for long income, and therefore, can we find income strips on asset-backed products that we can sell to the long income funds because they have oodles of money? You've got the pension funds, you've got, you know, long income funds, you've got everyone looking for stable growth with RPI, CPI linked increases. So when we looked at it, we started to think, well, we could securitize the license fees and the park fees that you had when you bought a caravan.
The equivalent of ground rent.
Literally the equivalent of a ground rent, except it was a little bit better. You know, you didn't have the issues that you had, the regulatory elements of it. And you had the fact that, you know, if you didn't pay your park fee, you didn't get into your caravan. Mm-hmm. So when we looked at that, that was how we got into this. And we said, let's buy some assets and income strip the EBITDA. Then we started to look at it and say, well, hang on a minute. There's probably, you know, there's a move. If you look at the time we were doing some research, there was, let's look at the best holidays. There were treetops, there were lodges, there were shepherd's huts, there were glamping. There were all these buzzwords that were kicking around. So we thought, well, there's a middle class of holiday maker who, yes, they'll go under a couple of holidays a year to the continent or to, you know, abroad, Dubai, Barbados, etc. But they also have half terms. They don't want to travel all the time. So let's go to the UK. Let's discover the UK. Let's go to Cornwall, Devon, Scotland, and these type of places. So we said, okay, let's just take poorly run and badly managed parks. Let's refurb the parks. Let's reinvent the Caravan Act. And instead of a classic depreciating asset, which a caravan is, let's put build regulation quality lodges onto these sites. And that's what we did. And we created a fantastic portfolio. Had a nice big rent roll from them. We had income off the sales, we had income off the rental, we had income off the resales, we had income from the
management,
the everything. Mm. And yeah, so that was what drove us there. We always thought that it would be protected in a downturn, because in a downturn, people would stop traveling, going far, and then they'd come to the UK. Little did we know that it was actually going to be the biggest downturn we've ever had, and that people were stopped from traveling. And then that created, people were just absolutely distraught. We need to get out of our little houses or apartments in London. So they started buying holiday homes. Then the holiday home sales just absolutely boomed. And I just think that timing was right. At that stage, we were in it for 4 or 5 years. But the end was fantastic. But the first year in COVID was disgusting because we had spent so much in the ground. You know, we were... you know, balls deep in big development costs. We had no sales coming through. We had builders that couldn't turn up the site. We had materials that weren't there. Costs were inflating. And, you know, at the time, Angelo Gordon, who were our funder and who were an amazing partner to us, they were thinking of, you know, do we get rid of these guys from the management? They stayed with us, thankfully. All of our premonitions came to fruition. You know, the units were fantastic. They were better than everything else. We were best in class. And we came through that first year, you know, with a horrific, it's a nightmare just thinking back now. I got PTSD thinking about it, but to a situation where we sold it. So that was fantastic. Yeah. You know,
Big sum.
Yeah, it was a big number. You know, I was very, very proud. You know, it was fantastic. The guys did a fantastic job on the exit on it. So that we sold that. That took a bit of time. We Then we built a care home again. We built a care home business up, small portfolio, but we sold that portfolio at the time again.
How many units, sort of roughly?
I think it was seven. It was either six or seven homes. But again, lovely, did a nice income strip on it. Mm-hmm. Built the business up fantastically well. Got planning, you know, asset management, you know. Had all of the movement that we had in prices, you know, swapped it out from a lot of local councils to a lot more private, got the split right, got the operations fantastic on it. That was lovely. So that sold. And then we bought in just before COVID a social housing, a for-profit social housing business. So that was where we moved into. We were building platforms, and along the way, we also then moved into the student arena, particularly Nottingham and Cork.
Why did you target those areas? Because students are a bit funny in terms of kind of where you think it's going with the populations and that kind of stuff. And
you are right.
Length of courses and all that sort of stuff.
100%. What we were looking at, we're bed specialists. If it's got a bed, we'll do it. Mm-hmm. We love it. You know, so hotels, caravans, BTR, residential, housing, house building, you know, and we liked student because we were very good at planning, and we had a very good partner in Nottingham, and we've probably got planning and sold with planning or developed out maybe close to 1,200, 1,300 units in Nottingham, mm-hmm. To some of the big players as well.
Yeah.
We've built 300 ourselves, probably going to start building another couple of hundred this year. And I think it was, I just liked the fact that it was small, the rooms were small, they're basically apartments, cluster apartments or 48 yeah. apartments. Nottingham was a great town, there was a lot of movement. I guess it goes back to Beamer, because we're so nimble, you know, and we're in touch with the market. We saw that a lot of the big funds were moving out of BTR, moving into students. So we were saying, okay, let's try and get ahead of the curve here.
Yeah.
We couldn't have foreseen how nice it was going to get with Liz Truss's, I guess, absolute abortion of the economy and the rate rises. But it fed into us beautifully, you know. And what we saw in COVID, which also drove us to student, was we saw people returning. When they didn't have jobs, they returned to education. Mm. And then we started to see the education numbers, and we started to see, well, universities were chasing overseas students. Overseas students needed some extra PBSA. They didn't want to live in a HMO in some street that's, you know, 16 people living in there. They wanted, mum and dad wanted a beautiful, brand new building that they were safe, secure. So actually, when we started to look at the numbers and the recruitment drives in the different cities, we started to think, wow, this is going nowhere soon. And, you know, we started to look at the delivery schedules and the demand versus delivery schedule. And we thought, wow, there's an opportunity here. So as much as I hate planning, I also love it. Mm-hmm. And we were a very, very good team around us in Nottingham. So we started to get some big sites, you know, sold a couple to some of the big student players that you'll know, you know, not, can't really name them per se, but they are sure, the biggest yeah. in the industry. But yeah, it was fantastic. So we have a big student side of the business. Social housing, again, we started looking at the different elements of social housing. We thought, okay, there's a whole, middle ground where the big classic G15 RPs, they like shiny products, right? And that's what they were buying for ages because they had so much money. Then you have Homes England looking to put money to work for these houses, but they can't raise money anymore at the levels that they used to with the bond issue. So it became very expensive. So all of a sudden, they needed to start to, I guess, you know, strengthen the balance sheet, get rid of sell some of the bits and pieces that they have. Well, we thought, well, some of the RPs that are out there aren't geared up for, you know, the EWS1 problems, the ESG issues that you have. So we thought, let's go back in and find some of the older products that we have and let's institutionalize them, bring them back into life again, the unloved. They're typically in great locations. And you know, let's breathe some life back into them. So then, you know, you can only do that as an RP. We are on a lot of the frameworks. So there's a whole, there's this whole mid-market or this sub-market, which is RP to RP disposals at the moment. And as you can see, there's no houses being delivered. The cranes in London are stopped going up very quickly. You know, the BTR boys, they're really, really struggling. And there is going to be some real problems, I think, if you think that housing is bad now in London. I think in 5 years' time.
We've got the lowest amount of housing starts on record, and we've got brick deliveries at their lowest rate in 5 years. So that's not looking good for the
next
year.
It's not looking good, you know. Yeah. And actually, it's nice to be able to pick up a phone to a contractor and they'll have a price back in 2 days.
Exactly. I mean, short term, it's great in terms of the labour market, but long term, there's obviously some problems on the horizon.
There is.
Lot to pick through.
About our house building. You know, we're building a couple of, we're building a lot of houses for some councils in Ireland. And we're moving back into residential in London because I think the time's right to be delivering into a market. And we've just about, well, we've taken on probably the biggest job I've taken on and one of the biggest potential planning plays in London, which I won't talk about, I can't, but it's huge. It's a big one. It's a big telephone numbers.
Exciting. So you've got, I mean, let's run through that bit by bit, I guess. So in terms of the holiday parks, like that was very much like a private equity play. You know, you've got to tie up a little bit of a lot of capital for 3-5 years. And was the plan always then to exit out on that income stream?
It was always to exit. It was build fast, get scale and momentum, and then exit.
Yeah.
So we were so acquisitive. Like we were in a proper acquisition spree on that. And there was always a 5-year plan. Private equity money is expensive. And when your IRR clock is ticking at 15%, you know, you 5 years, you know, plus the roll up, you're at 100%. So you need to get a 2x in the money before you see anything. So it comes to a point when you, no matter how much EBITDA you're driving, you know, if that grows not 15 plus 20, let's call it 20 because you want something.
Because you've got the margin.
Because you get your margin, you're out the game.
Yeah.
So it was always to sell that year. And look, we are looking back at the sector again now. I think, you know, it's cooled off a little bit. I think there's opportunities back there. I think that, you know, some of the big boys.
Are you looking to buy back any of your old stock?
No. That's all right. One's bitten, twice shy with that.
In terms of how you research stuff, because you seem to be jumping onto trends at really good times. Talk us through what you're looking at. If you go, right, what are we going to invest in next? How do you approach that?
So BMore, we've become we're like an idea shop now. Mm-hmm. Okay. Weirdly, Steph,
Better the bread,
Moana, all of those things. But Steph, we're starting to professionalize the marketing side of things. And we've been talking about what BMore actually is and what it means and what we mean to our clients. And I think if you asked everyone, you know, we're not the guys that come to you with, oh, hey, I've seen an office block. Let's buy that office block. Let's rent it. And let's wait and get a yield. Where actually, no, let's try and spot an opportunity because we're very small. We punch above our weight, but we're a small team. And we, you know, some of the bigger guys in BTR are going to get ahead of me. The bigger guys in student are going to get the funding. So I have to come with something fresh. And I guess that's where BMore are known for. If you want something different, if you're a PE shop and you're an institution and you're saying, well, I've got my guys that do my office. I've got my guys that do my BTR. I've got someone who does the big residential. I have a little bit of money in here and I need higher yields. You know, you come to BMore for those ideas.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm able to talk about this, because we're exploring that ourselves at the moment. And the reason that's important is because what it means is if that's what people expect from us, it's what we tend to look for. Mm-hmm. So for example, when we bought the social housing company, we had about 180 units. We're now up to 1,000. We're in the key worker sector, and I think there's a lot of it. We're, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say we're a charity and we're altruistic, right? But I think when you're making money in sectors, you also have to think to yourself, well, what can I give back to? What do we like? And there was this whole sector around COVID when we clapped for heroes and we walked out and we shouted for them, we banged our pots for them, and they were the ones working in the front line. Actually, you should see the state of the accommodation these guys have to come back to at the end of the night, right? Now, the NHS have some, it's probably the best thing about the UK, right? Everyone says that. But funding it and making it work is incredible. So therefore, you have the complications of all of their accounting systems, which feed down into how they can pay and the balance sheet and the CEDAL rules and all these regulations about what the NHS can and can't lease. So the reason that was important for us was we were looking at the accommodation and we were trying to find clever ways to rebuild fantastic products, give them back to the nurses and doctors and, you know, the janitors and the cleaners and the hospitals. So we wanted to move in a different way, and that was a nice sector for us. And then that led us on to, oh, wow, well, if that's the problem with the NHS, there must be the same issues with EWS1 issues, because these big, or the G15, they're not equipped to do all of these reclad, re-window. So we thought, hang on about, there must be some more P2RP disposals. So then that led us down that path. And then we thought, well, the ESG element of this, you know, you need to get these up to EPC B and better for an institutional investor. So they were just leaving this other stuff. So the ideas come from, you know, when we look at we are not a classic house builder. So our day is not filled with, let's drive the price of, you know, drywalling down, let's drive the price of timber down, let's get the contract. Yeah. That's not.
It's value adding.
That's all I have. That makes me different, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess because we're working with lots of the big institutions now, you know, we have a lot of high net worths and we do a lot of personal investment ourselves, you know. We're always having to move and to adapt. Some people say, you know, we sometimes sat at the start of the year and we thought, at the detriment of what? What can we ever sell BMO? Can we build BMO up into a brand that I'm going to sell or list, right? Like some, but I don't actually think that's us. You know, that's not us as a business. I can't see myself working for a board. You know? I'm unemployed.
I can't see you working for a board.
Can you imagine that? I mean, my own marketing woman's saying, watch what you say. Don't say this. Don't curse, you know? So therefore, we kind of run BMO like a family office. And that's allowed us the freedom to do what we want. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You talked about kind of the differences between student and typical kind of build to rent, and why kind of the Liz Truss thing opened up opportunities there even more so. Do you want to just go through that? Like what was that really about, the incomes being better, yields being better in that market to offset the higher price of finance, or what was the issue there?
It's a fair question. So when the rate started to kick in, no one expected the rise to be as wicked as it was. And so many people were caught off guard. And you had so many big guys that were, the yields were super keen. So what it meant was that people were pushing the envelope all of the time because the yield was so keen, and you had to get there. And therefore, you know, you were building really tight. There was no room for error. And that was all well and good. I mean, we got caught ourselves. We did a big development in Nottingham. We rented it to one of the biggest pre-let, to one of the biggest student operators in the UK, the best, and sold it to a long income fund. We had the AFL in place. We had the terms agreed. Once the change came and people saw the funds could see that the rates were going to start to push out, you know, all of a sudden, the minute the Sonia curve started to move, they came back to us and said, I'm really sorry, but we're not giving it.
Transactions have fallen off a cliff.
Cap rates moved. You're half a point. Now, that half a point is your profit.
Exactly, yeah.
And if you're working to those keen margins.
Half a point on 4%,
on 4%
is, what, I don't know,
20-odd percent. You're gone.
Yeah.
So what happened was all of these guys were caught short, all of the money that was in there, so they stopped buying land. They still need those units. So for us, the BTR boys were stopped dead in their tracks. Mm-hmm. No one's forward funding, because if you're borrowing money at 7, if you're lucky, and then you got your margin on top of that, then you've got the time value of money. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, 3-year bill, plus you've got the planning on top of that.
7 years before you start seeing income coming in.
Right, and then you're all of a sudden, you're now at, when you were trying to make it work at a 6 or 7 IRR, right, just about, your money's at that.
Yeah.
So
you've got to hope that your income's gone up. Rents have gone up, but they haven't gone up by, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you're being squeezed, like, I don't know, let's say your rate's gone from 3.5% to, I don't know, 6%. That's, I don't know, 80-90% increase in your interest.
You know yourself, right? You talk to the guys. That market is dead. Mm. There is no forward funding at the moment, but it's coming back. It will come back.
Yeah.
So what we thought was, we said, okay, these guys are going to be moving somewhere. Where will they move? So student was always good because, you know what? Yes, the cap rates have moved out. We've got enough rental growth in students, so the rental growth was big enough. The price that you have on a unit didn't move stupidly.
Yeah.
And as we saw a slowdown in the BTR build and we saw the contractors were actually looking for more work, we were thinking, oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, in a couple of years' time, we're going to get some margin out of this.
Out of the build, which was unheard of before. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that made sense to us. Just, okay, land is there. The guys who were lapping the stuff up weren't taking risks anymore. So we were like, okay, we'll steam in and, you know, buy a chunk of land and get planning for 200 units and 250 units, and we'll sell it to the big boys. So we've got a good reputation for delivering sites. And I think what happened is we also, look, I've made so many mistakes. I've told you this before. We've made so many mistakes in this business, right? Where, you know, we were saved because the price went in the right way. Weirdly, in this market, we're saved because of the mistakes that we made in the past, we've learned from. So BeMore now has become a full service. I guess we're cradle to grave type of development.
Like
business.
Apple, closed ended, keep it all in-house.
You know, we laugh about it, but I never compare us to Apple. I'm not going to have you say, yeah, BeMore is an Apple, right? However,
an orange, maybe.
Yeah, a lemon. We discovered all of the mistakes we were making through the process. So for example, we're doing a fantastic scheme with Third Eye around the corner. 160, 180 units, 80,000 square foot of office, you know, lovely building, tough. That's the one. I took 7 years to get planning, 5 years for planning, 2 appeals, we won both of them. But just a simple thing developed, and I know you've had contractors on, you've had planners on, right? Mistakes that you make, just because you get a planning consent doesn't mean that's buildable immediately. We made something so simple in construction tolerances that it moved the building slightly, and the building went outside the red line. So therefore we had to have stopping up orders and all of these different things that we had to go back and fix. That was another 6 months, you know. So what we did is we invested in a DM and a PM business. Which now manages everything for us. Our tenders are right, the contracts are right. Mm. You know, the work we do beforehand is fantastic. And that business now is managing £1 billion worth of build, right? A business that we started on the back of our mistakes. So that's fantastic. And now it's also helping me when I go and talk to big institutions about taking stuff through planning, and we bring that element along.
Well,
you've
got all the control, haven't you? Which is much more appealing than having to go out to third parties.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so going back onto the student side, that's where we started to see that opportunity. And, you know, touch wood, has been very good for us. You know, we've, like I said, you know, we've 1,200 units in Nottingham, a couple of hundred in Cork. And, you know, we're under offering another couple of sites, which is good fun.
Fantastic. Yeah. We're just going to take a quick break to hear from the sponsor.
Sorry to interrupt this fantastic episode, but I just wanted to share some really exciting news with you. After a long time of wanting to be involved in a financial services business, I'm very pleased to say that myself and regular guest on the Rodcast, Adam Lawrence, have bought into 978 Finance. We are a directly authorised FCA-regulated mortgage broker who specialises in buy-to-let mortgages, commercial mortgages, and bridging and development loans. I've been very passionate about finance for a long time and have been part of financing a lot of very complex deals, as well as your typical buy-to-let and commercial mortgages. 978 Finance focuses on the customer journey and embodies the pragmatic, solution-orientated finance for each case that I absolutely love. It's got some very, very difficult financing deals over the line for me, and now I'm really pleased to be part of the business. So if you do have any new mortgages, refinances, bridging or development needs, please do get in touch with us. You can either contact myself or you can email simon@978finance.com and we will make sure you're looked after. Let's get back to the show.
You touched on the social housing side of things, and look, there's been a lot going on in the social housing kind of market over the last year or two. You've had the debacle with kind of Home REIT and what's gone on there. How has that affected that model in any way, or has that really moved the needle at all in the market? I know you talked about looking at key workers, which seems to be a pretty safe bet in terms of occupier, but there's some occupiers that have kind of been thrown to the wall. Look, in terms of what's happened with the industry. It just sounds like people have jumped on trends and tried to artificially kind of squeeze out margins that maybe aren't really there.
Yeah, they have. Yeah. And fraud is fraud wherever you go, right?
Okay.
I'm just going to say it, right? Okay, you know, I hope there's no defamation there for anyone, but look, it was blatant fraudulent activity. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change the drastic need, you know. So we're closing two specialist supported housing projects at the moment, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that need is dire. You know, we own a share in just moving slightly off. We have a venture capital business where we invest in startups. We've invested and we have a big share in the transportation business for people with mental disability. Mm-hmm. Like, that business has boomed, right? I shouldn't say it like that, right? It's not meant to be, wow, aren't we lucky? But we invested in that business, but it's a sad indictment of what's happening to a lot of people and the stress they're under and the mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And I know everyone talks about mental health and I don't want to dwell on it. The point I'm trying to make though is the need for specialist supported is there, and it's greater than ever. You know, people with disability, not physical disability, mental disability. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that is still there. Yes, a couple of bad eggs ruined it for everyone. The concept was fantastic, you know, and it was a great way to do it, and it was bringing some professionalism. What they did was very different. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a huge opportunity, because I think that says still needs to be delivered. They are the most vulnerable in our community, and we have, you know, we do have a role and responsibility to do that. And mm-hmm. as a property developer, you know, it's not just to make money on, you know, it's to do it properly. So I think that, you know, we're starting to address that. You know, we've got two or three nice projects there at the moment. And I think that the opportunity is, okay, there were scumbags who were, you know, absolutely taking the piss, but let's go back to the root cause and the root nature of this sector and say it needs to be delivered. Mm-hmm. And you know, with the social housing side of things, it's a hard one for me as well, because I think that London has pushed development out. Mm. And you have to think to yourself, I know I'm getting back into London a little bit, but we looked and we said, why are we going back in? I understand, you know, everyone thinks developers are greedy, but someone needs to build these houses. You know, back in the 1980s, right, a third of all houses built in the UK from SMEs.
Yeah, yeah.
A third, maybe more. And now you can't afford it. I can't afford a planning application on two sites, right? Millions. You know, so you're just thinking, that's the application. Then I've got to build it. And then I've got to give you 35% of that affordable, so I lose money on 35% of my housing. Oh, and then I've got to give you the SIL payment. And then I've got to give you the Section 106. I don't have an issue with those payments, but I'm a small fry. And I just look at these and I think, when do you stop?
How can I get the margin in?
How can I get
to cover my risk in terms of if there's a slight movement on the end value, if there's a slight movement on construction or time, and the cost of finance goes up and things like that, that's why you have a margin.
That's why you have a margin. And someone is taking the risk. I'm taking the risk with my money to try and build this. Mm-hmm. Yes, if it comes off, it can be splendid.
That's what investment is. Potential upside, right? For the potential risk.
But there's enough's enough when you sit there and you say, I can't do it anymore. Mm. What's the point? I'll just build in Birmingham. Okay, bankrupt city, great. Not the best choice. My point is, they're much more receptive.
Sure.
Ireland, for example, right? Recovered the best out of after COVID. Small country, same issues, chronic housing shortage. But you know what they're doing? They're instead of putting their hand in the pocket and taking everything, they're actually giving you a grant to come and build because they need the houses. Such a progressive way to look at this, right? Mm-hmm. But in London, no developers. Let's take more. The planning. Like, right. I mean, I hear it all the time, and I know you talk to planning, but it does hurt. And the reason I'm talking about this, come back to the social housing. I mean, I'm looking at the Lord Mayor or the mayors, the worst record in delivery of housing ever for a mayor.
Even when they've been double counting.
They've been double counting, right? So I'm sitting there going, so if that doesn't tell you that something is wrong, and the system is broken, then help, the biggest house builders in Europe are not building in London at the moment.
You know? So is that then, is another way of looking at it, isn't that giving such big opportunity for London?
In terms of
the supply and demand and that kind of thing?
The demand is definitely there, 100%. But then you look at, so Help to Buy, you know, the developers who we used to call a Help to Sell, right? It's gone. So now,
Where's the carrot?
And like the banks, yes, people jump on the banks saying, oh, you know, they're irresponsible lending again, 1% deposits. They need that. How do you save your deposit?
I mean, I think the reality is there's been 99% mortgages. Skipton had 100% mortgages.
Yeah.
There's no take up. And the reason there's no take up is people can't, it's not the deposit. It's people can't afford the monthly payments
or the metrics that
you have. So that's why actually Help to Buy did work, because it covered both sides of that, even though it's beneficial for the developers. But something needs to be beneficial for the developers in order to convince them to actually build in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. I look at some of the biggest companies in the world coming into the UK. And all the talk after Brexit was UK was going to be like Singapore and it was going to become, you know, this. I mean, you know, what I just think, you're giving tax breaks to companies to come and build,
or to come and buy up UK companies.
Yeah, to come buy. So why don't you think separately and think, okay, we need housing. The developers will deliver it. We haven't got the money to it. Let's just soften our stance a little bit. Let's give them back something. You know, I don't know if when you get planning on the big projects, right? You have your viability. I don't know if you ever sat in a viability with the council.
I haven't.
Wow, it's fun. It's so fun. You know,
done the committee meetings, but not the
vote. Yeah, they're fighting you. You're called a liar. It's just like, no, you're trying to trick us. Then you've got your your pre and post. So if you come in under 30%, 35%, what's it called again? God, I should know this.
Do you mean with the affordable contribution?
No, they'll check. Oh my God.
Bio net degradable.
No. You know, where if you've got, so you come with viability, if you don't deliver a policy compliant scheme,
right.
Anyway, it'll come back to me.
Yeah.
Basically, where they sit and say, okay, well, we're going to check your sales against your cost before you start this. And then at the end,
If you've made too much money,
we're going to get some back.
I mean, the overage, yeah.
You spend, as a developer, you spend the next 2 years trying to trick the council.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Anyway, the reason that, going back to the question that came from, was the social housing element, that you're just not delivering that, you know, and I think that, you know, land.
You haven't got all those barriers.
You haven't got those barriers. You know, there's still false expectation of land values. They haven't retreated yet because a lot of the land is owned by a lot of the bigger people, so they're sitting on land.
And also, I guess there's a lot of equity in the land, so they're not being forced to sell, like, I don't know, 1990, where people just had to kind of hand the keys back.
Yeah.
But now, like, people are not being forced to. Do you think that's coming out in the wash over the next year or two?
I think people have hung on for a year, right? Mm. And I think the banks have been a little bit better this time around.
Yeah.
So But I think I'm starting to see now stuff in administration. I'm starting to see the rates haven't started to come down quickly as people thought. You're starting to feel that urgency, and you know the off-market deals are coming back again.
Certainly, the last couple of months we've seen an awful lot of stuff coming through
and
the desk.
Stuff in administration. Yeah, you're thinking, you know, just like saw something the other day, nearly built. You know, in Belgravia, not that that's our specialist area, but the fact is getting sent to me because people know I'm active in the market. And I'm just thinking, but that's, you're 3 or 4 months, 5 months away from being built. Surely you have to support the guy that's there. But that's
difficult market. So in terms of just jumping back on the student stuff, we had all the stuff in the news about overseas students and them being charged more for tuition, and so they're giving away places. Do you think that's, are there any kind of risks to your model in terms of students based on that, or any other kind of risks that you're thinking, oh, so shit, this could come and bite us in the backside?
Our model's slightly different. We get planning and build and sell.
Yeah, okay.
We don't operate the platforms.
But the end user's still going to, that's going to still dictate the lease terms in which
it will, but we can move city to city. Sure. We're not stuck with... we're not stuck with the rent. Now, I'm not saying that ours is a better model. It's definitely less risk. You know, we have probably a 2-year hold pattern, buy the land, get the planning permission and build it, let's say 2.5 years. Our biggest concern is that we're ready for the student intake.
Yeah.
You know, at the
timing
start of the year.
September.
Exactly.
Kind of thing,
and particularly when we've sold it. But going back to it, look, I'm probably not best placed to comment as an expert on this, but, it's very easy to get the data. You can start to see the marketing. And yes, unfortunately, a lot of the big universities are going overseas to get different students. And there's even changes where before it was traditionally Chinese. But these are slight insights that we have in the market. So for example, now Chinese parents are less likely to send their... So, for example, Nottingham, take for example, they're putting a moratorium on studio only PBSA, because they were starting to lose students to different countries. And the reason they were losing students to different countries was because some of these foreign students that were coming over, and one of the big key drivers was your education, but you're learning English.
So if you're stuck in this,
if you're stuck in there yourself with
you're
other
not communicating, not socializing,
other Chinese or Malays, you're speaking a language, you tend to socialize with them, stay with them. So they were going home with no English. So then they started to look at, you look at different, there's a lot of Nigerians coming in, a lot of African, a lot of Indians, all of us Indians, but like, so people are recruiting in different areas, and that's driving some of the different type of accommodation that gets built, you know, different ways of relaxing, different ways of eating. But look, I think it's very easy to get the information. You can look at the recruitment.
It's the context in which it's
exactly comes, and am I ahead of the curve, or have I calculated correctly how many sites have got planning, how many starts in site this year. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people moving into student at the moment who are residential guys. I think it might be a little too late for some of them. But you know, we're now kind of moving out of new build to repurposing. Again, the asset management play, finding old sites that are in great locations, but they're first generation. They're being discarded by funds because they don't hit the EPC values. So therefore, we're saying, okay, we'll do the work.
We'll put the capital in to get that.
We'll put the capital in, and we'll do a cladding exercise in it, and we know we'll put some asset management in there. And that's what BeMore do. You know, I can't compete with IQ, or I can't compete with Unite. I never, nor should I. So where's my angle in this sector? So
what do you see as the biggest kind of risks to what you're doing over the next couple of years?
Planning.
And how can you mitigate that though?
Subject to deals. But again, the risk
does, of does
the,
that help out the landowner who's maybe having, it's either sell or go into administration. So I guess,
different ways to do deals. You know, pay his interest for him. So subject to, a bit more costly, but less risky. I think, you know, it depends on which sector. There's different sectors. I think house building you know, again, the big house builders are aggressive in the market, but huge discounts out there at the moment. It's a good time to be a buyer and to look for a couple of deals. But I think, again, everyone is just talking about this, the planning system. And I know you're blue in the face from saying it, and everyone is. And you must say, well, why can't they do anything about it? I think it's the barriers to entry which stop everyone having a go at this, right? I do think that, I do think something needs to be done, but it's not as drastic. I just think, just be real with your expectations, you know.
In terms of kind of
time frames, yeah.
Costs.
You know, try and help the system along if you need it, or if you have. Yeah, look, planning's there. I'm not going to harp on about it too much. The good news is, I think construction is coming back in. Mm-hmm. You can start to price again. I think if rates start to retract slightly, which they look like they may do, or they have to, you know, I think, again, you start to get back into this nice middle ground where there's a bit of firm terra firma underneath that, you know, it's no longer, you know, toss a coin.
What about the chances of rates going up?
Because
no one seems to be kind of talking about
it. No, they don't.
But it's not crazy to think that. I mean, I don't think the chances are big.
I mean, wage inflation this year is 7% again, they're talking about. You know, most supermarkets are talking about food going up again. You know, it depends on what you read. I don't think they can. Definitely, the sound is some of the big house builders are calling the bottom of the market. Mm-hmm. Some of the banks are, you know, offering better rates. You know, the lenders that are talking to us, you know, the margins aren't as big anymore.
And they've still got to get money out the door, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're not making money. Yeah. So it's not like it's an illiquid market from that point of view. There's still funds that need to find a home for their capital.
Yeah,
but it's
there is a lot of money out there. Mm-hmm. But is it the right type of money? You know, one of the things I'd like to do, I'd like to see. You know, I know pension funds, you know, they have their process, and I know they've got so much money that they need to work with. But I'd like to see someone. You know, we tried it. We have an idea that was trying to, you know, be a master developer, but for smaller developers, and bring people back into the game, and. What I meant was, instead of just giving the big money to the big funds, actually do a bit of work and say, okay, here's a smaller developer. Let's fund him for a little bit, or let's fund this and allow us to take cheaper funds. Because if my cost of capital goes down to 4 or 5% from a pension fund, or even 8, as opposed to 15 from a middleman, imagine how many more homes the small house builders would build. I think there's something to look at there, and I think if someone was...
Well, is there like a government bond that could maybe go into doing that?
So they should like do. Yeah. I thought we tried to approach Homes England with something like this.
I mean, they've got this money that they're not spending, and spending on infrastructure instead of homes.
Exactly. We tried to develop this concept called Developer, and it's Developer Partner. And we were saying, okay, you know what? I understand how to work with institutions, but I'm also an independent. I understand what it's like to be a small developer and where your bottlenecks are, your planning cost, your site setup, your tender process. Mm-hmm. So let me, and then I understand the sales exit, because I sold thousands of units. We have a sales arm. So I thought, okay, let me sit in the middle, get a load of money from Homes England. Let me distribute to the developers, not the big institution who's going to charge a massive rate on top of that. And I will be the partner with the developer, so I only share with them. Mm. And we thought it might get traction, and you know, maybe it will. But I just think if the money could be dissipated slightly better, then that would drive.
I guess from their point of view, it's like if it's bitty and smaller, they've got to then, it's more work and things like that. So they almost need that second level of management to then distribute that, and that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, it is. But at the same time, you're building the same houses. Mm-hmm. You're getting better returns. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's smaller. So, you know what, employ project managers to manage it on your behalf, as opposed to paying people down here, all the project managers. Mm-hmm. Look, there are all these different things, and I'm sure, you know, it will evolve. But they're just ideas that, you know, we're throwing around.
So what are you bullish on for the next couple of years?
I'm bullish on residential in London again.
Yeah. And what would need to happen to change your mind on that?
I think that rates not coming back down. Mm-hmm.
So when is the point at which you go, rates haven't come down? Because look, rates are going to come down at some point, but what's the time frame
you're working? So then I'm still bullish on London, but it's just what product am I bullish on?
Right, okay.
So I think at the moment, right now, all of the talk is the prime, super prime. Mm-hmm. And it looks cheap to foreigners, unfortunately.
It's looked cheap for 5 years.
Yeah, definitely the last 2 years. It does look very cheap. Yeah. And I think now the lack of stock coming, like I'm talking to developers at the moment, they're selling 3, 4, 5 units, and they're not boasting about it because they're saying, well, hang on a minute, this isn't a recovery. Mm-hmm. But what they're doing is they're using that momentum that they're starting to see to go out and buy more sites or to lock in a bit more. I think that I think the zones 3, zone 4, zone 5, I think if that came away from BTR and the BTR boys didn't buy everything they got, I think that market is very, very strong. I think, there will be some new product come out. You know, if Labour get in, it depends on your view on politics, right? You know, I don't really care because I play with the game in front of me.
Yeah, well, it's out of your control, right?
It's out of my control. So I play, you know, what am I playing against? Okay, that's the game, fine. You know, I'm not big enough to influence it, but I'm not small enough that, you know, it's irrelevant. But
yeah.
That's what's in front of me. That's what I play. So I do. I am bullish on London, and I am bullish on, you know, housing stock for people to live in and rent. You know, it would be interesting, I think, to start to see some relaxation of the buy to let taxation side of things again. You know, because, you know, and make people move back into it. Take some of the power out of the big BTR guys. Bring more private landlords back into the game. I know they get a bad rep, but, you know, listen.
Well, it'll bring also a bit more stock to the market.
That's exactly
well.
The stock to the market, you know, and where are people putting that money? So
political suicide, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. The greedy landlords and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's political suicide, yet you're happy to have these huge institutions do a BTR, and they're still being rented, but now they're massive institutions running and managing it and driving the rent up because they have to hit the IRRs they have. So it's such a juxtaposition.
Exactly. Does it matter who's doing it? I guess the whole idea was George Osborne was going, he wanted to professionalise the sector and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's arguments for it. It's
there
work.
Is. There, yeah, there
but,
is. But
who knows?
Anyway, so yeah, I think that side of it is good. I think that income will get a bit better. I think that for people who like income stuff and product that's asset backed, or that, you know, you've got, you know, alternative sectors, I think that's got some growth to come in it because people are looking at that now. Extra care, for example, you know, we've just won a tender with Surrey County Council to provide 7 extra care. We won another five, so 6 at the moment. That's an interesting angle for us, you know, which is basically social housing, but for older people with more needs, you know, just below specialist supported. That's a sector that, you know, I think has got a lot of growth in as the population gets older. You know, we become more aware of the requirements for those particular sector, you know. And then the rest, mate, we'll be... see if we can find, you know.
Yeah.
Keep buying and trading.
Fantastic. So I guess last question then. What do you know now that you wish you knew when you got into property? And what advice would you give to someone who's kind of coming into the sector from maybe university or graduate level?
Wow. I mean, that question is so loaded. What do I know now? I know a lot more than I did at the start, but for better or worse. Okay, let's start with the advice I'd give people. I think property has, you know, property does have a reputation that get rich quick, right? There's nothing quick about property. you know, at the moment.
Forever.
Whatever. Yeah. But it is a fantastic industry. I think the people in here, I think everyone needs property and it's ever evolving and ever changing. And I think for people coming out of university, I think, you know, be prepared to put in the hard yards. Like, be more the new kids on the block, but we've been around for 20 years. And now people are saying, oh, well, where have you come from? Well, actually, we've put the hard yards in. And yes, there are people who land on their feet and they'll do a deal and they'll make millions immediately. But there are a lot of other people that are in there a long time. So my advice to the guys is, you know, batten down the hatches, get stuck in, decide quickly what you want to do, whether it's beds, industrial, leisure, because there's nothing wrong. You do end up and you get a lot of people stuck in something that they don't understand. Mm-hmm. So find what you like and get stuck in there. And I think, what would I do different now? I think what I spend our time doing now is how we raise money. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest hurdle, I think. I remember a guy, Colm Campion, he used to work at Anglo-Irish Bank years and years ago. I remember he told me once, he always said to me, at the time when we were buying and selling flats, you know, I was afraid to ask people for £50,000. You know, he said, you're thinking about this wrong. There's always money there for property. There's always money for property. Finding money is not the problem. Finding the deal is. And I always think about that. I think that make sure that you get the right funding in the deal, because that's what will knock you out and it will destroy you. The rest you can learn, build price. You know, I could say I'll find the right deal, but I think the right financing for me is the biggest issue. You know?
Brilliant. As always, super good, insightful chat, and thanks so much for coming back on.
Pleasure.
And thanks for giving us the first interview as well. It's great giving us your time. And hopefully we'll see you before 5 years.
And I just think from us, congratulations to you. I when you called me the first time and said, let's do this, I thought, not a chance, is this going to work? And here you are 5 years later, three kids between us each.
Mate,
congratulations, well done. Keep it up. I do really genuinely think that what you do here is attainable for a lot of people. And great, ordinary guys can understand it. You know, you do have great guests on, me included. But yeah, thanks, Rob.
Brilliant. Good stuff. Thanks, Rob.